The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to let you know about another great ESPN podcast, The Low Post. Get the inside scoop on all the biggest NBA news as the biggest names in the game join ESPN's Zach Lowe, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news, reaction, and analysis, and coverage of the biggest events on the NBA calendar. The playoffs are finally here, so be sure to check it out. Follow The Low Post as well as The Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcasts. The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Stream the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Friday morning because we waited until the end of this Suns-Lakers game. Tim McMahon, you're in Dallas, Texas.
Howdy, partners.
I think I'm about as close to you as I am to Denver. And in fact, I'm going to look that up while I introduce Tim Bontemps in where are you? Boston, Massachusetts.
Well, as long as you're not that close to Bontemps, you're all right.
That's right.
All right, let me see how far I am from Dallas, Texas. And the reason this is relevant, guys, is because right now we started this recording this podcast before the end of Portland, Denver.
Nope, 6:51, it tells me, to Omaha.
All right, 6:69 is what it says from my actual spot. So it's about 100 miles farther. I can't watch that game, that Denver game, because I'm blacked out, because NBA TV blacks it out. I'm deemed in the local Denver market. And by the way, tens of thousands, if not millions of people in Denver couldn't watch this game either, because there's a contract dispute with the carriage, and NBA TV was blacked out there too. And if I was a Nuggets, it's been going on for 2 or 3 years or something like that. And if I was a Nuggets fan, I'd be really mad about it. And I don't know who to blame, but the NBA probably should have tried to figure this out.
And look, a lot of Mavericks fans dealt with the same stuff because they've got you know, the cable versus the regional network and all that crap going on too. So game two went over the Clippers, Luka putting on a show. You know, putting the Clippers kind of on the brink. A lot of folks here couldn't watch that, and that's ridiculous.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Wow, that's wild.
All right, we'll talk about that later. So first off, we stayed up late because we wanted to watch the Lakers-Suns, and the Lakers fans got to be feeling good. The Lakers themselves were feeling good. They had their swagger going in this one in the second half. Probably the most swagger I've seen the Lakers play with in about 4 months. You know, they had it going early in the year before all their injuries happened. Really sort of found their stride, take a 2-1 lead in this series. And look, there's a lot of stuff going on in this series. Chris Paul is absolutely not right. The concept that he was going to bounce back from that stinger, it just hasn't happened. Devin Booker, partially because Chris Paul isn't right and is drawing more attention from the Lakers. Devin Booker 6-19, and you know he's just not getting it done. You know, there's time left in this series. I mean, really, the Suns really just have to win on Sunday, and you know they're back in business. But you know, if you watched this game, and if you didn't, I can just tell you the Lakers got going, and really, it ended up becoming a little bit of a became a little testy late in the game because the Lakers were, you know, strutting on the Suns. Devin Booker got thrown out for a flagrant 2 foul on Dennis Schroeder. And those two have been going at it the whole second half. I'll tell you, one of the crazy things, at the foul line in this game, the second half, every time there was a free throws, the teams were just jawing at each other. Jawing at each other.
Well, LeBron and Jay Crowder have hated each other since they spent like a week and a half together in Cleveland.
They hated each other before that when Crowder was with the Celtics.
Good point.
That's remembered from with LeBron shipping Isaiah Thomas out of town that week. But you know, also say goodbye.
Yeah, but he didn't want. Yeah, he didn't want. And Crowder, I remember when Crowder got to Utah. I'm like, hey, you know, how you doing, man? He's like, dude, I had to get out of there. I'm so glad to be out of there. It's the one stop that he's had that he wasn't, you know, liked in the locker room and a good fit. But they can't stand each other, and LeBron just loves taking it to him in the playoffs.
Yeah, there was a moment in the third quarter after the Lakers got really the game under control, and Crowder was just leaning on LeBron before an inbounds, and the ball was it was right in front of the Laker bench, and LeBron is smiling, and Crowder is just glaring at him and leaning on him, and LeBron posts him up, and the Laker bench is just enjoying every second of it, and he slipped him on a spin move and went in for a reverse layup and scored. And you know, that was when, you know, the full clowning, the clowning was on after that.
When he made that spin, I thought he was going to go up and dunk it. And I think
DeAndre Ayton came over and prevented that. But
yeah.
Anyway, Crowder got ejected too. He got a couple of technicals. He was, you know, he eventually got thrown out for jawing at Schroeder, probably because of what happened with Schroeder and Booker. Booker body slammed him. So, you know, but ultimately at the end of the day, you got Chris Paul Bontemps with one arm, and everything that's happened in the series and everything that's going to go about it, and the way the draw and the play-in tournament and everything, I mean, that's all relevant and important. But if the Suns can't play with Chris Paul at operating capacity, it's just not going to be a series.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a few weeks ago, there's somebody on a podcast who was going on and on about the depth of the Phoenix Suns. And I believe there are a couple other people on a podcast talking about the depth of the Phoenix Suns that did not like the depth of the Phoenix Suns and thought they had five or six players that they trusted and everybody else they weren't sure about.
Okay. You are correct. They do not have another Hall of Fame point guard behind them. I apologize.
I just had to get you a little wound up there. Yeah. But look, in all seriousness,
that's hard to do.
It's hard to do. In all seriousness, to your point, this series is the way it is because of Chris Paul's injury. No disrespect to the Lakers. They've controlled the last two games, in particular in the second half of this game tonight. They did a great job of using their size and physicality on defense to make life difficult for the Suns, and they have taken control of the series. But the reason that has happened is because Chris Paul is not Chris Paul and not even close to being Chris Paul. And I know campaign had a bunch of points in game two. I know he hit some shots in the fourth quarter of game three, but the Los Angeles Lakers do not care if campaign makes 12 shots in a row. They're not going to guard him, and they're going to put
like Austin Rivers is doing right now.
Exactly right. And they're going to send two guys at Devin Booker every time he gets over half court. And that's what they're going to do. And look, at the end of the day, that's the way the series is going to go unless Chris Paul can get back to normal. Because despite the fact that LeBron James has had a couple bursts in these games, but otherwise hasn't really attacked the rim, despite the fact that half of the Laker team came up with some kind of injury in this game, you had KCP go to the locker room, we'll see what happens with him. Yeah. Anthony Davis is grabbing at his knee. Like, they have all kinds of issues. They haven't looked great. But the Suns just aren't going to be able to score enough if you've got the whole defense collapsing on Devin Booker. And you've got Chris Paul either out there as a complete non-entity, or you have campaign next to him. And that's especially if you have Jay Crowder, who I think is now 1 for 97 from three in the first three games. Like, if he's not going to hit shots, I don't care how tough a guy he is or what defense he's playing on LeBron. He's got to make threes, especially him and Mikal Bridges both, for them to have any chance to make up for this Chris Paul injury. But even if they hit shots, if Chris isn't right, it's just hard to see how this is going to be very competitive.
No, Chris is left now. The right is non-existent.
That's true.
But, I mean, you've got Chris Paul basically with, you know, one arm, his strong arm, tied behind his back, playing against the team that has the best defense in the NBA, and it looks like it. And, you know, the Lakers, it's still not beautiful offensively, but since a stinker in game one, Anthony Davis looks like AD. And, you know, LeBron, I mean, he might not be peak LeBron right now, but 75%, 80% LeBron, still a pretty tough dude to deal with.
Yeah, and the thing about this game the Lakers played in the second quarter of this game, and I don't think we need to analyze this thing like it's finals game five in 2-2 series, but the Lakers missed like 12 or 13 shots at one point in the second quarter of this
game. There was a 7-minute period where the two teams combined for 11 points.
Right. So that was the chance for the Suns to take control of the game.
Yes.
The Lakers, as they sometimes do, went cold offensively. And the Suns not only didn't take advantage, they were behind at the half despite that.
They missed a lot of open mid-range shots. At one point had a 4-on-2 they somehow didn't score on. I mean, just really – it was a really big missed opportunity for them.
Yeah. And then in the third quarter, you know, and LeBron definitely started feeling it going to the basket. And then AD, you know, he and AD were playing two-man game. AD, you know, starting to get some traction, had over 30 points. But
that's the whole key for the Lakers, right? Whenever LeBron gets aggressive and can get to the rim, it changes everything for that team. And when they're a jump shooting team and they don't have him making those attacks, I know Dennis Schroeder did a decent job getting to the rim in this game, but like they're just a totally different team when LeBron's aggressive. And like you said, that third quarter, he took off. Their defense was physical. They got up in the Suns, and especially without Chris, they just couldn't really handle it.
The thing about it is, you know, we see things change a lot in the postseason. You know, one of my sayings is that there's always time, which when we talk about the Clippers later, I'm going to be bringing that back up. Playoff series are long, seasons are long, games are long. There's always time for things to play out. 10 days ago, the Lakers and their fans were salty AF because they had to play in the play-in tournament. They were going to have to, you know, the situation wasn't working out for them.
Air Force?
You know, LeBron didn't look great. I didn't even hear what he said.
He said Air Force. Okay. He said AF.
AFA. You know, just wasn't looking great. Now they look like they've got some traction, which you figured they were going to get. It was just a matter of whether it was going to be in time before, you know, and it looks like it is. And the Clippers are in the toilet. And, you know, you start to look at the bracket over there and you're like, you know, this might set up really nice for them because the Lakers may essentially inherit the number two seed.
Well, listen, you know, for the Clippers, if there's a silver lining here, it's that, look, they obviously did not want to see the Lakers in the playoffs, and it looks like they will accomplish that goal.
In 10 days, we may be seeing a different story. I mean, that's the nature of it. You know, maybe in 5 days, we may be seeing a different story. You know, the Suns only have to really win one. If I don't think they're coming back from 3-1 on LeBron James.
This comes down to what Chris Paul looks like the rest of the series. If he looks the same, they have no chance. I mean, they'll lose the next two and it'll be over.
They have a slim chance if he gets back. Like, there's a reason that despite having home court advantage, the Suns were still significant underdogs in this series.
Well, I mean,
they had to play out of their minds to be able to beat the Lakers and probably have the Lakers struggle.
I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that. I don't think the Lakers have played that great in the series, and the Suns did not play great in game two and still almost won with Chris Paul not as a complete non-factor. Like, Chris Paul's been a non-factor in the series since the end of the second quarter of game two or game one. Like, that has totally thrown this up in the air. Because, like, again, even today, it's not like the Lakers were great in this game. Like, they sort of won by default.
LeBron looked good, like, for about 6 or 7 minutes, but on balance, LeBron didn't have, like, a great game.
I mean, he finished 9-for-19. He had, I think, 21-7. I mean, look, it's 21-9. He got the job done. I mean, look, they won the game.
Just saying he's going to get better, is what I think. I don't think he's, you know.
Well, look,
no, he's not peak LeBron. He's not close to it.
The biggest thing for them, honestly, like the biggest thing for the Lakers about this is if they can, like, let's say Chris can't get right and the Lakers can win these next two games and close this out in five. Like, this Denver-Portland series is probably going longer than five. And if any extra days he can get off could be the thing that determines how far they go in the playoffs. Like, because you're right, Brian, the better he gets, like, that could be the number one determining factor in who wins the title, let alone who wins the series or who gets out of the West. Like, that's such a huge thing. And any extra time off he can get would be huge.
Yeah, so it's not quite over with, but as we're actually recording this, there's 12 seconds left and Denver is up 7. So it looks like Denver's going up 2-1. That is a huge victory for the Nuggets. I know that they're you know, the three seed, and you expect them to win, but they lost game one. And obviously, I mean, look, guys, they are starting their starting backcourt is Facundo Campazzo, who is definitely got a bunch of international experience, but is an NBA rookie and was their third string point guard, you know, 2 months ago.
And he's 5 foot That's 10. Right. He's a 5 foot 10, 30 year old rookie. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Their other starting guard is Austin Rivers, who had a great game in this game tonight, hit 5 threes. He was a 10 day guy about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah. After sitting on the couch.
That was who they are. That's who their starting backcourt is. And they are trying to get to the second round. Now, granted, their front court is awesome. And Jokic mm-hmm. had a great game, another great game tonight. But, you know, this.
The runaway MVP, Nikola Jokic, please refer to him by his rightful name.
Maybe I can't vote for him for MVP because I can't freaking watch the game. Which I did vote for him for MVP, by the way.
20 for 38 from three in this game for Denver. That will get it done on the road.
No kidding. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the Blazers, and I didn't see it. I will watch highlights later. And by the way, guys, I know that I can get an illegal stream. I'm aware of that. Okay?
But you're a man of
principle. Old man Windy chiming in with no.
I complained about this a couple of years ago, and the NBA, somebody from the NBA called me and said, hey, let me give you this sign-on, and you can just watch all the games no matter of blackout dates. And I'm like, yes, I know that it's possible. That's not the point. It's not the point. The point is you should be able to watch a team that's 550 miles away. But I digress.
Well, and it's also just completely insane that playoff games are being blacked out. Like, come on. Yeah, I mean, look, blackout rules are insane these days anyway. They shouldn't happen. But, like, playoff games being blacked out. Like, I had no idea that you couldn't watch Clippers Mavs in Dallas. Like, that's insane. And this is completely insane.
I mean,
insane.
Like, it's a bunch of people, you know, it's people who, like, several different cable things. And it's the same thing. The beef with the regional network, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you've got to get like this specific streaming thing to get that. And it's just a mess.
Guys, it's not just the Nuggets. I also am blacked out of the Timberwolves, which is a plus.
A lot of playoff games there.
And the Thunder, because I'm blacked out.
Omaha, Nebraska, the center of the NBA universe. Every team claiming it.
Seriously.
Yes.
As its own market.
And by the way, nowadays I stream everything, but like 2-3 years ago when I bought League Pass, like on the actual through cable, they didn't have the games in HD.
Wow.
So, and granted, I understand that I'm not in an NBA hotbed. I get it. No, you know.
Well, you are in an NBA hotbed because you can't watch any of these scenes, clearly.
Yeah.
They do have cable in Omaha, though.
We got it. Listen, we just got it last week.
Don't knock the Golden City on the hill. Don't knock it.
So anyway, that's neither here nor there. My point is it's messed up, and it does disadvantage fans, and it's been a problem for a long time, and nobody seems to care. So there's a lot riding on this. I don't quite understand why there should be so much riding on this series for the Blazers. If they somehow win this series over a wounded Denver team, it's not like their championship aspirations are really that different. But for some reason, right, as I talk to executives and people in the league, they're like, well, if Denver wins this series, if Portland doesn't make it out of the first round, then Terry Stotts, there's a good chance he's going to be fired. There's a chance that they could look to make changes to their roster. Who knows what else might happen? You know, obviously there's Damian Lillard rumors out there about what his content would be. But whether they win the series or not, they're going to have the same roster. They're going to have the same challenges.
But listen, the NBA, like everything else, is about perception, right? And if the Blazers win this series in advance, the perception will be that they've gotten out of the first round of the playoffs for, what, 3 out of the last 5 years or whatever, and they're still among the contenders in the West, and maybe they make an upgrade, and you can go in the next seat. You could talk yourself into a lot of things. Heck, they could get in the next round, and they could They could advance. Who knows? Like, you win the
series. But they did make roster upgrades this year. They traded the picks.
I understand that. I agree with your position on what people should think. I'm saying what the perception is. And if the perception of the team is dramatically different, if they win this playoff series and have a chance to advance again, or if they lose to a Denver Nuggets team, who, as you aptly pointed out, is starting a 30-year-old rookie and a guy they signed to a 10-day contract in April who got cut by the Knicks, right? Like, that is a much different scenario to look at. And I think if you lose this series to Denver, you have to – the cold, hard reality of what this team is staring you in the face.
And that's why this
is
a –
And you can look it off if you win the series.
And this is a costly loss. Now, that series isn't over at all. I mean, like, you know, Denver is susceptible, McMahon. But Dame Lillard turns 31 on July 15th.
Yeah. So. And, you know, we can talk about guys who, you know, the one team, I guess, of the one team, like, players of just perennial all-star caliber, who compares to him in terms, like, Reggie Miller at least made a finals. You know, at some point, like, I respect and admire the loyalty, but at some point, he is going to have to make a decision. Do I want to have a legitimate chance to compete for a championship, or do I want to say if it doesn't happen in Portland, it doesn't mean as much?
37 points in this loss tonight, which is now, game's now over. It was 5 of 16 on threes. He must have been hoisting. Again, I'll have to wait for some sort of replay. 15 of 31 overall. So, you know, yeah, I mean, they've got, you know, they've got
a springy performance by Damian Lillard.
A springy.
I mean, he had some ridiculous finishes above the rim.
Guess I'll have to wait for SportsCenter highlights.
Hey, were you able to see this game?
I don't know if you heard, but I didn't. So, yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I don't have an opinion on it. I'm professional. I did a story that ran today about Michael Malone and how he's tried to keep this team together. And one of the things, because earlier tonight, the Milwaukee Bucks dismantled the...
I was going to say, we're 20 minutes on the pod. We haven't talked one word about the demolition by the Bucks. We got to get to
that. Well, here we go. I was talking to Michael about for that story. And this wasn't in the story at all. This was just another conversation we were having. And he was just saying this season, he goes, I know that not everybody is going to understand it. He's like, but we have felt such a hangover from the bubble. And he's out there, you know, he's pointing. He said, you know, really the final four teams that made it last year, he felt really paid a toll this season. That would be the Heat, the Celtics, the Lakers, and the Nuggets. And you look at that, I mean, other teams obviously had rough patches with injuries, but you look at those four teams, and they're all sucking wind one way or another. The Lakers just look like they may end up getting back on their feet just in time. We'll see. But, you know, Malone just talked about, he's just like, man, he's like, we are barely getting through here. And, you know, I think if the Nuggets are able to win this series, it'll be a terrific accomplishment based on everything that they've had to go through, because it's not just Jamal Murray who got hurt. It's, they've been decimated with their other guards.
Dude. Yeah. None of their rotation guards are available.
Right. Well, Monte Morris is back, but he's not 100%.
Yeah. He's back now. But by the way, all of what you just said makes what Jokic has done this season that much more incredible. This dude did not miss a single game and has carried a team that has had just, you know, like the bumper falling off, you know, the transmission goes out.
How many games did
and this thing's still cruising down the highway.
How many games did Embiid miss?
A million and six.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Contemps, the Bucks had to deal with their loss to Miami last year. They had to confront how to handle that. And they, you know, it hung over them for a long time. It still hangs over them to a certain extent.
Yeah.
It's not the same Miami team, clearly, but it's not the same Bucks team either.
No, it is not. And gentlemen, I'd like to talk to you about two teams. One team went into last weekend, had a chance to control their destiny in terms of who they would play in the first round of the playoffs and beyond. And they chose to play it out and play their players. And they beat the crap out of the Miami Heat last Saturday. And I know Jimmy Butler, I believe, didn't play in that game with a back injury. But still, they played all their starters. They won the game handily and guaranteed they'd play the Miami Heat in the first round of the playoffs. And there were a lot of people who criticized the Milwaukee Bucks for doing that and said, oh, man, the Bucks should have tanked that game, should have made sure they didn't play the Heat, should have made their road as easy as possible in the playoffs. Then we have another team on the other side of the country, the Los Angeles Clippers, that – had a chance to determine their path in the playoffs, and they chose to intentionally lose to two of the worst teams in the league, the Houston Rockets, who have the worst record in the league, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, who were desperately trying to have the worst record in the league.
The Oklahoma City Tanker, call them by their right name.
That is correct. And in the fourth quarter of last Sunday's game, the Los Angeles Clippers tried to have Daniel Arturo set their record for getting his shot blocked as many times as possible in a game and lost that game to ensure that they would avoid the L.A. Lakers.
To point Poku. Right,
to ensure that they would not play the L.A. Lakers for as long as humanly possible in the playoffs. And now we fast forward almost 2 weeks later, and the L.A. Clippers have lost twice at home and have had their coach say it's much harder to score on the road or at home than on the road. So we'll see if that happens in game three.
That was one
Ty
of the –
Ty has said like, a couple of things these last few days that are just –
Jeez, like what are we – oh boy, they came and torched us at our place. But wait till we get to their spot. There's gonna be
pressure's really gonna be on in Dallas.
2-0 going home.
That's right. And meanwhile, the Milwaukee Bucks have gone out and demolished the Miami Heat the past two games. And look, I think obviously that first game between these two teams last Saturday was a great game. One of the first games of the playoffs went right down to the buzzer. Went to overtime, and the Bucks escaped from that game with a win. And they have played these last two games like a team that has nothing on their minds and is playing free and easy and loose, and they look awesome. And I think the way those two teams have approached this, two teams that had a lot of baggage after last year's playoffs, had stuff hanging over them all season, I think it's instructive of the way these series have gone. And I really love where this Milwaukee Bucks team is at right now. And I have been waiting for this Bucks-Nets series in the second round for months. I think it's got a chance to be a titanic series, the best series of these whole playoffs. And I don't think the Bucks could be in any better position going into them from a mental standpoint than they are right now with the way they're playing and the way they've approached this whole setup by saying, we're not worried about who we're playing. We're just going to go through everybody and win. And I think that's a championship mentality. And I think it's led to the results they've had so far.
Well, and Jrue Holiday has no Milwaukee Bucks playoff baggage. PJ Tucker's just a 15-20 minute per game guy off the bench for them, but you know, he's a tough minded dude. He's got no baggage with the Bucks. And you know, you can question Giannis, can he be the go-to guy on a championship team? You can question his skill in terms of a lack of a jump shot, this, that, and the other. I don't think you can question that dude's mental toughness and competitive fire. You know, but Drew Holiday, I mean, that trade, they gave up a million picks for him, and it's worth it.
Drew Holiday,
it's worth it. Because
in this game tonight was plus 41.
Yep.
In Miami, in a must-win game for the Heat, which, by the way, the Heat tend to do well in. Plus 41. And this is, you know, this is the thing about this series. By the way, you know what Giannis was in this game tonight? And I know that this is all circumstantial. I'm not trying to sell plus minus is be all end all. I'm just trying to illustrate something. Giannis was plus 4.
Sheesh.
Plus 41 and plus 4 in the starting lineup. Now, the thing about this that I think is remarkable is that I don't think Giannis has played that well. I mean, let me phrase that. He's played well. He hasn't played great.
Well, you know where he's been really impactful is on defense. And one of the things that he's been criticized for in the past is not taking on the top assignment on the other team at times, because he's probably the best help defender in the league. They've utilized him that way. From the opening second of the series, he has guarded Jimmy Butler. And while Jimmy had made some shots today, he didn't get anything the first two games. And I think that is another way this team has really set the tone in terms of how they've played, and they've just taken on the challenge and been awesome. And you couldn't be more right about Drew. I mean, he was unbelievable in this game today. And you think back to last year when you have Eric Bledsoe on the court, you know, just not playing to the level that they need, and you turn him into Drew Holiday. It's just an incredibly huge upgrade. And so far he's delivered every single thing they possibly could have hoped for from him in these playoffs.
Yeah, so, you know, in Miami, you know, Jimmy has been, you know, they look like a team that has definitely suffered from just everything. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jimmy was just in and out all year. Spoelstra made a lineup change. He put in Goran Dragic to the starting lineup tonight, trying to get him going. You know, Dragic didn't play that well.
But at the same time, though, remember, again, a week ago, people were saying, like a lot of people were saying, the Heat could win the series. And like the Heat played well coming down the stretch into the playoffs. Like this, like people are wound up about the Nets, you know, destroying the Celtics team that's been ready to stop playing for weeks, and you know, some of these other series that have gone on. But like the Bucks, this was a lot of people's minds, a toss-up series. And the Bucks are demolishing the Heat. Like, yes, Miami's had a long season, but when Jimmy Butler played this season, they're 33-19 in the regular season. Like, basically, they just were really bad when he was out with, you know, with COVID for a while, when he had an injury for a few games. Like, otherwise, they were an elite team in the East.
Also, I want to say something. I don't really think that this is an overwhelming narrative, but I just saw that on Twitter tonight, Victor Oladipo was trending.
Oh, stop.
I don't care if they're Victor Oladipo or not. They're not, you know, I mean, that was an unfortunate, and it really, really unfortunate for Victor, you know, getting that terrible injury going on in contract.
But it was a flyer.
Yeah, it was like I've seen people say, you know, boy, the Heat decided not to go for James Harden and instead got Victor Oladipo. They got Victor Oladipo for, I don't want to say nothing, but you know,
close to nothing. It was, I mean, like Kendrick Nunn was better than Victor Oladipo this year when they were both healthy. Like, this Victor Oladipo is not changing the series. If you get Victor Oladipo from the 2017-18 season, yeah, maybe that Victor Oladipo would have changed the series. But that, you know, that Tim saw the Rockets a lot this year. That guy didn't play in Houston. He didn't play in Indiana. And when the few games he played in Miami, he didn't play there either.
Well, and he didn't play great in Houston when he did play.
No, that's what I mean. He wasn't, Victor Oladipo from 3 years ago at any of those places.
Yeah, he wasn't going to elevate that team. You know, you can say they should have really gone all in on Harden. I don't know that they didn't have the picks. The Rockets did like Tyler Hero, who's you know, all in all been a disappointment this year. But I think if you put the Nets deal next to whatever the Heat, kind of the best offer the Heat could have made, understanding that Bam Adebayo was not going to be in any offer. I even if the Heat would have gone all in, I still think they would have finished second or third in the Derby.
Yeah, and the one thing the Heat had going for them coming into this series was they had been really hot offensively. Over the last 2-3 weeks of the season, maybe a little further, and it was like they had found their stride, and that was going to be their thing, that they were just going to really be able to throw in the octane. And they didn't. I don't think they cracked. I know they haven't cracked 100 the last two games. Tonight they didn't crack 90. I can't remember what the score was at the end of regulation on the opener on Saturday, but they only scored 107 in that game. So the Bucks have brought the defense, which is one of the things that they couldn't handle the Heat on last year. The Heat, and Hero was, otherworldly in that series, but he just hasn't been here.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So earlier we talked about the Clippers. McMahon, they're in Dallas. The game that they have Friday night, game three, they're down 2-0 to the Mavs. By the way, they're down 2-0, and Luka hasn't gone white hot yet.
He's been pretty hot, good, but
seem to remember in the playoffs in that series last year, he had, I'm counting on Luka to have a white hot game in this series. My point is they got the two games in L.A., without Luka having to go nuclear. And
if he ain't nuclear,
he had 39 points in 38 minutes in game two. I would say that's pretty good.
We can debate the semantics of nuclear. I would say that their best chance to stop Luka right now is to foul him, because he's shooting better from the floor and the 3-point line than he is from the free throw line.
Truly incredible.
And dude, like, nobody, Kawhi can't stop him. There was a possession where, Kawhi, they pick and choose when to put Kawhi on him. And game two, they did it more often. Game one, they barely did it at all. But there was a possession game two, late third quarter. Kawhi matches up with him. The Mavericks just clear out that side of the floor and say, go to work, Luka. That dude, just backs him down, gets to his spot, does a little, little pivot into a Dirk one leg fade, swish, and just cool as could be. Paul George, Luka gets wherever he wants against him. Patrick Beverley, at least two times this series, Luka has scored and screamed in his face, you're too effing small.
Right.
And he's 1,000% right.
1,000%.
Marcus Morris Sr., Luka and got an and one on him the other day and goes, he can't guard me. Nah. Again, he's right. Double team, the Mavericks as a team are shooting 50% from three. Tim Hardaway Jr. shooting 65% from three.
But
in this
they've
series.
Taken a lot like of double wide Luka. Open. I mean, yeah, yes.
Well, exactly, because you double Luka, boom, boom, boom. They're getting wide open threes off it. Ty Lue and the Clippers have zero answers right now, and they've got King Kong on their back just smacking them upside the head. They've lost five straight playoff games. But I tell you what, though, I mean, they couldn't beat the Rockets or the Thunder. I don't see how they're going to beat the Mavericks. All right.
Now, let me ask you this. Bontemps and I talked about this earlier. Obviously, they had a Game 7 last year against the Nuggets. It was a pretty damn important game. But considering what could potentially happen this year if they wash out this first round, is this game on Friday night one of the biggest games in Clipper history? It's easy to say that because the Clippers have no history.
Well, I was going to say, like, what is that?
Well, the question isn't, is it one of the biggest games? The question is it the biggest game? And the answer to that is yes.
I don't know if it's the biggest game 7 last year.
It is the biggest game because of everything that is on the line for this team. I mean, they've got Kawhi. They've got Kawhi's free agency coming up this summer. And look, everybody can say Kawhi's going to stay. He probably will stay. If you get swept in embarrassing fashion in the first round, who knows what happens then? And again, this team got put together last year to win a title last year, lost in embarrassing fashion last year, made a ton of changes, said, we're going to come back and do it this year. And then now they're in the playoffs and they're getting, you know, they have the potential to go down 3-0 in the first round after setting themselves up to play this team. I mean, yeah, this would be like, you can't compare this loss to anything else.
They didn't set themselves up to play the Mavericks as much as they were running. I
understand that. But my point is, like, they were making moves in the last weekend of the season, setting themselves up for a championship run, right?
Assuming the first round was just, no big deal. We'll breeze through the first round. The Clippers are. And this was the same thing in the bubble. For a team that has accomplished jack squat, their arrogance is at ridiculous levels. It's like every guy on the team thinks he's got two Finals MVP trophies just because Kawhi does.
Like, what's the comparable loss if they lose a series in 4 or 5 games? Like, it's not like they've had any. Like, yes, Serge Ibaka's hurt, but their main guys are all basically healthy. It's not like injury. It's not like Derrick Rose getting hurt against the Sixers or something.
I mean, Paul George and Kawhi have been banged up, but
guys are all healthy. They're all playing.
Kawhi had a 30-point half
right
in game two. I mean, his foot is bothering him, but I mean, how can you say he's not?
I mean, to me, you probably have to go all the way back to something like the Nuggets beating the Sonics in 95 in the first round in a 5-game series. And that, I'm not saying that from the standpoint that, like,
I mean,
Denver,
you can say,
I'm not saying, I'm not saying Dallas. Well, I'm not saying Dallas. Yeah. That's right. That's the comparison. That's
we believe
that's
Warriors.
It's that,
but that
series.
Wasn't the a thing combination is the, of 2 years.
No, but I'm just saying in general,
what the Dallas team sure was.
Well, that was,
it was a combination of a finals collapse.
Yep. Oh, you're right. That's true.
Well, and
so it's finals collapse and they win 67 games in the regular season
the
and then just get their. And by the way, it was also a case of some little late season arrogance because the Warriors had given a match. I think the Warriors beat them every game in the regular season that year. And it was the last game of the regular season. And if the Mavericks win that game, I think the Warriors were out of the playoffs. Right.
It was Avery something Johnson. Something like that was the scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. Avery Johnson says, screw it. I'm resting my guys. We'll see him in the first round. And then they saw him in the first round.
And that is the comparison. Right. And look, this Dallas team is not obviously an 8 seed. They've got one of the best players in the league on it. But it's the same thing in that that team was never expecting to lose and no one expected it to lose in the first round of the playoffs. And if these guys lose and especially get swept in the first round of the playoffs after everything that's happened the past 2 years. Yeah. That would be an all-time stain on this team.
Hey, is Paul George's revenge tour still going or was that just like a January thing?
Oh, Paul.
Well, listen,
I'm just here's the deal. Yes, it's a problem that Luke is the best player in this series, but Kawhi has, Kawhi's been pretty damn good. So that's not the problem. Is Tim Hardaway Jr. is the third best player in the series, and it's not close. It's not close. Paul George has been, he's not way off P, but it ain't playoff P. He's pretty good P.
He played
pedestrian P.
Great offensively in game two. But the
in the first half.
But their Clippers defense was an abomination in that game, and they're knowing that
they're just walking. They're just walking into practice shots a lot of the game. It's just one wide open shot.
And knowing all the things on the line, and knowing how going down 0-2 would be just devastating, to come out in the second, to come out of game two with that mentality defensively, it doesn't reflect.
Well, there's a lot of practice shots, quite
frankly, because you know the coach is responsible for motivating the team. You wouldn't think you'd have to motivate them for in game two of a playoff series. You're down 0-1 in, but you know. Apparently that's a problem.
And Luka Doncic and Rick Carlisle are doing like Allen Iverson and just walking right over Ty Lue. Everything he tries to come up with, it's an easy counter.
Well, listen,
they just figured out.
We have talked a lot about the Clippers, and understandably so. But to your point, McMahon, the Mavs have been awesome these first two games. And like, look, I'm not going to predict this is what's happening. But like, would it be super shocking if we wake up 6 weeks from now and the Mavs are in the finals and this is LeBron 2007?
Yes, this is a flawed team.
Listen.
Well, I mean, LeBron in 2000.
So is everybody else
LeBron
on the West.
LeBron in 2007 had a flawed team, and they ended up in the NBA Finals.
Well, that's true.
Listen, one time in NBA history have the Mavericks left L.A., or in franchise history, have they left L.A. with a 2-0 lead in the series? They won the championship that year. That's all I know. So it seems to me like a pretty safe prediction.
Well and listen, just... and look at the – like McMahon said, look at the West. There's flawed teams all over the place. This is not the Western Conference that we've been talking about, you know, all season.
But the problem is you think like and there's a long way to get there, but just hypothetically speaking, say Mavericks see Lakers in the West Finals. Possibility, still wouldn't predict that. The Lakers will be better in the West Finals.
You're giving them a win over the Jazz, not only over the Clippers, but the Jazz?
No, I said hypothetically. I said I wouldn't predict it. I said,
and I'm not. And to be clear, I'm not predicting.
I do not have the Mavericks beating the Grizzlies in the.
And to be clear, I'm not predicting that the Mavericks are going to the NBA Finals either. I'm just saying, like, this is setting up for, like, we talked last week about Chris Paul having a chance to rewrite the history of his career, right, with a run in the playoffs, and like Luka Doncic has a chance to make that kind of a run because look, every series he goes into, he's going to have an argument to be the best player on the court at minimum.
And until he sees the ball.
I'm saying an argument.
Or unless.
I'm just saying an argument. Like he's one of the top.
He doesn't have an argument against LeBron. You're the same one. Are you still shining the crown on Kawhi's head? Just stop it.
LeBron is one of the. Luka Doncic is one of the best players in the league. He's capable of being the best player on the court any night that he goes out on the court. That is my point.
I'm saying that he hasn't played his best basketball in this series yet. So I'm, you know, going to be on that side. But I'm also going to say that
I don't know. The guy's hitting like 30-foot runners and making
it
look
easy.
I'm
telling you, I don't think he's played his best basketball yet. Maybe he won't. I'm just saying I'd be worried about that still being in his bag.
What do you like, what's he need for you to be happy? You got to have like a 50-point triple-double? What's going on?
He can do that.
And I also to jump back for 1 second, I do think you're right, McMahon, in that, again, the longer the Lakers can stay in the playoffs, it at least opens up the possibility that LeBron is springier and bouncier by then. And obviously, that is the one thing of all these things we're talking about in the West that could really change everything is if he gets back to looking perfectly good again.
One thing I will
say
is, again, I'm leaning on my 18 years of covering the NBA. I've seen it a lot of times. There's always time. Things change. You know, you just when you think sometimes you have playoff series figured out, they pivot. I have been continually let down by the Clippers. So I'm not sitting here saying that I expect it to happen, but
it's why this game is such a massive game. It could re-galvanize them and get them back in the series. It could also put a fork in them.
You know, Peter,
you know.
Also, the Mavs, depending on Porzingis, is always going to be a little shaky because we'll see how, you know, can he stay healthy? I think he's got the protocols all figured out now. I think he does. So the gentleman's establishment.
That was another classic quote this week. I got confused about the protocols. that was another all timer.
Well, he was at the strip club with all his friends on the team by himself.
McMahon is just the master of subtle, not even really subtle, but just like digs at.
I was gonna say our guy is,
some of those guys like.
I was gonna say our guy is not exactly subtle. So
I was told he just walked on through.
Hey, Lou Williams walked on through to get to the kitchen to order the wings.
That's true. Maybe the wings are.
I suggested on Twitter, and Magic City Kitchen says they're going to take it up. A buddy of mine, Clarence Hill Jr. from the Fort Worth Star Telegram, old Cowboys beat writer, made a Magic City Kitchen joke. And I said, look, dude, they've got to like set some picnic tables up outside, make it an outdoor dining situation. They can get the Knicks coming through there. Shoot, they might even be able to get the 76ers next round. The way old, I tell you what, I love Trae Young, boy. He's talking that and he's hitting shots. He's selling shoes. I mean, they can talk about him balding, but he is a baller. So,
Peter Vesey, who long time with the New York Post and also with NBC, he was well known in his column, which was, you know, must reading for decades.
The hoop du jour.
The Hoop du Jour column. He would always come up with nicknames. You know, some of the nicknames are better than others, but you know, he had a lot of great ones. Joe Barry Carroll, he nicknamed Joe Barely Cares.
Larry Brown.
Next Town Brown.
Came up with Larry Legend for Larry Bird. Yeah,
probably many more that I'm forgetting. But he used to call the Clippers the paper clips. And if the Clippers wash out of this series, considering that this team was, you know, the way they look on their roster versus their output, you know, with an ode to Pete Vesey, this would be the paperclips era. This team would be the absolute paperclips.
But is this championship or bust? We'll have to wait till Paul George lets us know.
Let me just say. I don't think Kawhi's going anywhere. I really don't.
I don't either. And for geographical and financial reasons.
Yeah, and I also, you know, Paul George, I'm not, you know, let's see what happens in this series. Like I said, there's room there for it to be turned around, but I'm not sure, like, you know, because I know that if the Mavs lose this series, people are going to be like, all right, well, you know, trade Paul George. But I don't know what the trade is that is going to change their scenario.
Well, and also it's like, okay, trade Paul George. Who's giving up huge value for that? Right. It's like Mavericks fans when they get all mad at Porzingis or, you know, recognize that Porzingis and Luka are, you know, aren't on the best of terms a lot of the time or whatever. It's like, trade Porzingis. Like, okay, do you realize that every team in the NBA knows what his contract is, knows his medical history, like sees the income, like all the warts that make you want to trade the guy are, that's also the reason you're not going to get back great value.
Well, listen, I think Paul George is still an excellent player. And I think if they wanted to trade him, they could get a lot for him in a trade. But the issue with this team, for as much as the playoff P jokes are funny, the issue with this team, while it's somewhat on Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, it's just as much on the fact that the rest of the team is pretty flawed. And again, go back to last year. What was it?
Dude,
what
was Luke Kennard's in year one of a $64 million deal and hasn't stepped on the floor?
He hasn't started it yet.
Whatever.
They trade for him and extend him. They trade for Marcus Morris and re-sign him. He has not been good. Serge Ibaka, I really like the move. He is now not healthy. Patrick Beverley has not been good. I mean, look, go back to last year. What was the biggest issue with this team in the playoffs? A, it was Doc playing Montrezl Harrell. That was not a problem after they fired Doc and Montrezl Harrell, they were not going to re-sign. The other problem was their offense would continually bog down in the second half of games and they would just stand around and do nothing. and they did nothing to address that.
And Paul George was cracking the backboard jump shots.
That was after they would get up in every game, and then their offense would grind to a halt, right? And what did they do to fix that? They did nothing. Like, their big move was to trade for Rajon Rondo at the deadline.
And I would say, and I know that Ibaka is hurt. He's been hurt the whole second half of the year with a back injury. But I'm watching him the other
– and it's bothering him again.
But I'm watching him the other night, you know, trying to come up with something to try to win that game. And Ibaka's not out there. And Rondo's not out there. And those were their biggest moves.
And the Ibaka thing's really problematic because I like Zubats, but – he keeps getting switched on to Luka, and it's just not fair. Like, if Luka's hitting a step back, just forget it.
Well, they keep doing these soft switches. Especially, and it's like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just don't do that when he's out there. Like, they just kept doing the same thing over and over again. And then after the game, Ty Lue was like, yeah, you know, Zubac really killed us when he was out there. It's like, or you guys could try something else. I don't know. Like, if every time you're just going to have him get set up guarding Luka, like, yeah, it's probably going to end pretty bad, you know?
Well, and you know, they start the series out, and they're like, well, okay, we're going to put Kawhi and Porzingis, because then when they run the pick and roll, with those two guys, we'll just switch it. And Rick's like, fine, Porzingis, go stand 30 feet from the hoop. We'll play 4-on-4. Who's Zubac? Okay, Dorian Finney-Smith, come on, you're the one setting the screen. And so, like, you know, they're going to be able to hunt him regardless. And look, they've got four shooters around Luka in that starting lineup. Like, Dorian Finney-Smith has become a really good three-point shooter. Maxi Kleber, same thing. And those are two great developmental stories. Hardaway is just – I mean, he's going to get paid.
Listen,
they're going to have to pay him.
We've talked a bunch this year, right? They made that Josh Richardson for Seth Curry swap, thinking he would help their defense, and it really hurt their offense because for the second straight year, Josh has not been – a consistent three-point shooter outside of Miami. And so, like you said, putting Tim Hardaway back in that starting lineup, now you're back to basically the same core group with Seth, you know, Tim in there instead of Seth, that had the best offensive rating in the history of the league last year, right?
Well, it was Tim last year too. They've just gone back to playing a bigger lineup with Kleber playing next to Porzingis.
Right, true.
And look, give Rick some credit. There's been, you know, it's not just been a smooth ride this year. And late in the season, like the last week of the regular season, he made the call. We're sticking with Hardaway in the starting lineup. This is when Kleber got back and healthy. And Josh Richardson, I know you're represented by Bill Duffy, who also represents Luka Doncic. So this could be complicated, but you're coming off the bench. You're now our fourth guard. And, you know, I know you've got a player option this year. It's not ideal for you. And Richardson admits he didn't like it, but he also, you know, look, it's playoff time. He's not pouting about it, and he's actually, you know, helped them in a limited role in this series.
Well, Friday night is a really important game for the Clippers. Really, really, really important. And if Dallas can win it, how many fans are going to be in that building, McMahon? What's the
– I mean, I think they're going to have them, like, seated up hanging from the rafters.
I mean –
Like near full capacity is the way they put it in the press release.
You know, in watching the Laker game at Staples tonight, I know they had 7,000 people in there, but
it's 16,000 minimum.
Yeah, so
basically,
you know,
these quote unquote near capacity arenas are just not accounting for the seats they're not putting around the benches where they used to have seats.
My point
players.
Is, it's
every other seat is full.
My point is, it's going to be a tough environment.
It's a Friday night in Dallas. People are going to be having a good time. It's going to be a rowdy atmosphere for sure.
Well, and let's hope it's at least within reason, because the NBA has had a rough week as far as fans
that is
go.
True. Same thing in Boston also, where there will be another rowdy atmosphere.
And by the way, there's history with the Clippers with Pat Beverly. Kind of the Mavericks super fan, their store brand, Jimmy Goldstein. You know, he was banned for the rest of a season a couple of years ago for, you know, yelling "F your mother" at Pat Beverly. If I'm just saying, he should not be in this arena. That would be poor taste.
This is
best.
This situation. I mean, it's hard to enforce because you got fans out there, but it's actually, it's simple. You protect the players. You protect the players.
And you know what? If fans, I think that teams should have there should be a list that's publicly available of people who get ejected from arena. If you're going to act like an ass, your name should be released publicly.
Well, I mean, obviously we had this spate of things happen with Trae Young getting spit on and Ja Morant's family. You had that story today, Ja Morant's family being treated poorly in Utah. And obviously Russ getting the popcorn dumped on him. Again, it's a simple rule, protect the players. And I do think that the league and the teams have reacted. All these people got banned, and I think, you know, they're trying to establish a deterrent and stuff like that.
So I have an idea. Like, if you spit or throw something at somebody, I think the player should be allowed to post-game. You can put, like, the 24-second clock on, and the fan has to stand in the paint with the player. You can't leave the paint for 24 seconds. Now, the player also would have the right in
this scenario.
This
sounds like a bad Jeff Van Gundy rant in the middle of a blowout.
No, this is a good idea. I think the league office should seriously consider this. The player should have the right to tag team a teammate. Because, like, Trae Young, I love Trae Young's game. No disrespect. I think a fan could go 24 seconds in the paint, probably. Okay. So I don't know who it would be. Like, I'd have to.
What is happening for 24 seconds?
Gallinari's
got a mohawk now.
What is happening for 24 seconds in the paint? I want to know what's happening.
If you're in the paint with Russell Westbrook for Russ for 24 seconds, I'm guessing that he's going to beat your ass for all 20. He's going to land about 112 shots. Them hands, I bet you, are real quick. I'll tell you this. I wouldn't want to find out.
Yeah.
I promise you this. Old popcorn dude, he doesn't want 24 seconds.
No. He almost got 24 seconds, too. It took like four guys to hold Russ back, and he had a bad ankle. He might have scaled that. He might have scaled that wall to get up there.
Don't be a jerk is a pretty good philosophy to go by.
And by the way, I know that it's hard on the players. The players have to have the professionalism to not react. I mean, not react is the wrong word. They can't take matters into their own hands. That's their responsibility.
They can't. Yeah, you can't have malice at the palace. But what are you doing? Like, what are you trying to do when you dump popcorn on a guy who is clearly
Russ is
in a competitive mode? He's heated.
Because this is happening a lot. You know, he's a guy that people don't like. But do not the players do not. Nothing shall touch the players. You shall not touch them. You shall not throw anything that touches them. When it comes to heckling, obviously there's certain things that cross the line and offend people who are within earshot. There's a little bit of a different standard. But, you know, this is very easy. The player cannot be touched or anything touch the player. I don't think there's much of a thing to say about that.
And don't... you know, make lewd comments to a player's mom. Like, who raised these people?
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Tony, our producer, who stayed up late. Thanks for listening. We'll be in touch with you early next week, and we'll still be calling them the paper clips. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Adios, amigos.
NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is... Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.